A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 245. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Joe 90. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Joe 90 was a mix of 1960s spy-fi or spy television and science fiction elements mixed together, along with puppetry and model work that Gerry Anderson and their team who did this show, that they were all renowned for in the, as they were called, Super Marionation shows. And this particular show ran for 30 episodes, about 25 minutes each, on the ITV network, of course, running in 1968 and 1969.
Yes, it's our yearly visit to Anderson and his team in those Slough studios and the wonderful world of Super Marionation. It's an exciting show to watch as a child, Joe 90, because you can see yourself as the hero. It's got lots of groovy 60s aspects, I think, Brian.
Yes, it certainly does.
So in our last episode, we of course introduced Joe, the World Intelligence Network's most special agent, a 9-year-old boy who acquires special abilities through his father's remarkable big rat machine, into which he's transported in every episode and implanted with these brain waves, which he retains the abilities of the expert as long as he wears those all-important glasses. And when once he's got them on, he can become an astronaut, a racing driver, a fighter pilot. The possibilities are endless, Brian.
Absolutely. And we also get a number of rescues in the familiar Gerry Anderson style, with sort of Thunderbirds-esque type things happening with Joe 90 as the protagonist. We have deep sea rescues and trapped miners, snowy mountain bases, and so on.
Yes, we got sometimes the situation calls for somebody to get into a very tight space. And because the adult experts are too big, then they use the ability to put this the brainwaves into a child. Or we've got other sort of, as we say, spy and espionage situations which require their way to bluff their way through security by just bringing in a child who can't possibly be any harm at all.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, we have the model work and explosions that we would expect to see in a Gerry Anderson show and a Super Marionation show. And they're certainly there, and they're good. They're quite fun.
Yes, I wonder if it was a special day on the set whenever the team under Derek Medins knew they were going to get to blow up something. They certainly loved an explosion in the world of Super Marionation. And, of course, this show provides several, as you say, vehicles, deep-sea rescues, bases, all sorts of things will be blown up. But of course, Joe 90 and his father will have bluffed their way out. They'll have escaped in the nick of time, either by using his remarkable abilities or, as I've said, just by being a father and a child who can't possibly be any harm to anyone and can easily get their way past security. Sometimes even with the barefaced truth of telling the security that Joe piloted the plane or rescued the miners. And of course, they never believed, because what could a 9-year-old possibly do?
Yes, absolutely. That theme comes up a number of times.
And, you know, we've talked about Joe 90, but we haven't even mentioned various other elements of the show, such as their flying car. This, of course, is the future. And although they live in a lovely, charming English cottage, when they go on their various journeys, they get into a remarkable jet car that can take off and fly around. You won't be surprised to hear that, of course, it was a toy that you could buy, and no doubt you can still find on eBay. And of course, the show did other things. They would have dream sequences. So they would have imaginary episodes in a way where Joe would be transported into, for instance, a Western. We've mentioned before on British Invaders, it was very popular in the 60s for television series to have a Western episode somewhere in there. We've seen it in Doctor Who, we've seen it in The Prisoner, and Joe 90 does one as well.
Yes, and even in the 70s that was being done still with shows like The Tomorrow People. We do seem to see things like dream sequences and flying vehicles and a lot of the Gerry Anderson shows. I think every Gerry Anderson show we've covered has had a flying vehicle in it somewhere. Very close to that, anyhow.
Yes, it was the 60s. We knew that flying cars were coming.
Absolutely. And in some of them, they were more the rocket ships and jet planes and things. But it was certainly very common to see those. It's a cool-looking vehicle that they have, but it's something that I could never imagine being actually on the road anywhere.
No, it's a slightly bizarre one. Google Joe 90's car and have a look at the pictures, or I'll post one up on the British Invaders page on Facebook.
Yes, it is quite a neat design.
And of course, we've talked about, you know, a 9-year-old boy going into action as a secret agent with these special abilities and the all-important glasses that gave him those abilities. We've talked about how the Andersons, I think, deliberately chose a boy as the hero because they knew what their target audience was. They knew that they would identify with Joe as the hero and they would see themselves as the secret agent. And of course, watching it as an adult now, because I remember watching this show as a child and being totally captivated. But as an adult, there's a strange disconnect, Brian, where we sort of perhaps not quite so sure about what we're watching in some of the episodes. And there are some ethical issues raised as we go along.
Yes, there are. And in fact, in some regions, they chose to broadcast a warning reminding viewers not to try to do the things that Joe 90 would do. I don't know if they actually used the words "don't try this at home, kids," but it was something pretty close to that.
It was pretty close, and I think on one of the DVDs in the box set I've got, you can see, or you can hear rather, the actor doing the recordings for those warnings. You know, Joe 90 has special abilities, don't try this at home, don't do what he does. I hope, you know, there were no boys trying to actually bluff their ways into secret bases where fighter jets waited to be stolen.
Yes, one would hope. It is a somewhat odd show to look at now as an adult and also present day, as some of it is dated and there are issues that are more prominent now than they were at the time. You know, we see Professor McLean casually agreeing to put his young son in danger repeatedly.
Yes, now that's very interesting. We've got the father sending his son into danger over and over again. And now, interestingly, they do argue about this in the first episode, but rather strangely for an Anderson production, that argument is portrayed on screen as a series of still shots rather than an animated episode. So we see just like pictures of Sam and Mac arguing, and we hear raised voices over it. I'm not really quite sure why they use that device. I suspect it might be partly to do with the fact that the imagined theft of the fighter jet, which makes up the first adventure, took up so much screen time. They probably didn't have much time left for the argument, I guess, Brian.
It may be so. Yeah, I don't know.
And they didn't use this sort of still photos device again that I'm aware of. But if anybody out there listening knows a bit more about that, I'd be delighted if you got in touch and let us know. It's an odd device. But anyway, there is the argument in the first episode where Mac argues about Joe being used as a secret agent and going into danger. It's an argument that he seems to forget in all the subsequent episodes, though.
Yeah, there is some concern showed from time to time, but most of the time they just say, Joe with the glasses and what have you is competent, he can do it, he'll be fine.
And, we do see in at least one episode Mac using the big rat device on himself, so he gets special abilities. So presumably it can work on adults. Why they keep using Joe over and over again is a bit strange. I mean, I know, for instance, in the mine rescue episode, it's because they need somebody who can get through a very small space and then still have the expert's abilities in tunneling or excavation or explosives or whatever it was. So they needed a 9-year-old boy there. But often it's not quite clear why they couldn't have used an adult agent. But there you go. We have to have the hero of the show. He's a 9-year-old. Boy, he is the most special agent, Joe 90.
Yes, absolutely.
And of course, they've got to get their way into and out of these adventures, Brian.
Yes, we often see Joe on his own or Joe with his dad or with someone else, bluffing his way past all sorts of security, and the other characters are helping to bluff and so on and so forth. As a side note, it has been noted that the show actually made wearing glasses more acceptable for kids in the late 60s.
Yes, I mean, this is very interesting because it was true in my family. I know Gerry Anderson talked about this himself. It's on the Wikipedia page about the Joe 90 show. But yes, it did actually, make glass wearing cool for kids. And my younger brother, who had to wear glasses at about that age, he became, he was able to accept it better because it made him look like Joe 90. And I know when it came to the spin-off toys, because obviously with Annie Anderson show, there were plenty of toys. It was my brother Michael who had the Joe 90 briefcase playset with the various bits of spy equipment concealed beneath the sort of the folders of an ordinary briefcase. So it's very interesting. Help to kids who had to wear glasses.
That is so interesting. And made glasses associated with superpowers, I suppose.
Yes, I mean, I'm reminded actually of Michael Caine playing Harry Palmer, a much older and different sort of British secret agent. And of course, he had very cool glasses. But for kids, it was Joe 90. If you wanted to persuade your young son that he had to wear his glasses to school, you used Joe 90. You can be just like him. But by the way, don't try and rescue anybody.
Yes, indeed. So we should get a little more into our own opinions of this and what we felt about the show. So, Eamon, what did you like about Joe 90?
Well, I've got to start again by mentioning the Andersons' sort of ability to create these great ideas and then just to hand them off to their brilliant production team. Such a well-oiled unit by this time in the late 60s. I think, at the top of their game, really, in terms of puppetry and model work, special effects sequences, title sequences and music. So as a slice of Super Marionation, as a slice of 60s Andersonia, it's in that respect, it's fantastic. I love it for all that sort of stuff. Obviously, there are one or two sort of nitpicks, which we're going to get to in a moment. But, the Anderson team, we have to say, Brian, it's remarkable stuff. And like I say, he did have this ability to pick the very best people in their various fields to help him.
Yeah, the look of it is, for a Super Marionation show, quite cool. They got to the point by this point where the puppets could move very well. Now, we still didn't have them really walking, but it wasn't as obvious when they were doing things to avoid having puppets walking around as it had been in Thunderbirds, for example. And we had the puppets with the good proportions, and they were capable of a little bit more facial expression. So the look of it was quite smooth and has a more sort of effortless feel to it, and fits in with this late 1960s feel with the music and everything, which is quite neat. It's quite fun.
Yes, it is. It's all lovely stuff in a way. The stories, you know, I think some of them are very interesting. We do see, I think, some very familiar Anderson-type scenarios, particularly in the rescue missions that we've come to expect from Thunderbirds and, to a certain extent, Captain Scarlet. So there are certain sort of rescue sort of scenarios, I think, that'll be quite familiar from those other shows, Brian.
Yes, there are, and they had the explosions and all of those things. They didn't rely on the vehicles as much in this one. They did have some. They were in there. But it was not like Thunderbirds, where the vehicles were more important than the people, almost. Or even Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, where the vehicles were very important indeed. They showed up in here, but they were moving a little more towards the characters, which was nice.
Yes, that, as we know, is Anderson's intention, was to make this a more character-driven show, and so perhaps playing down the vehicles for that reason. But yeah, interesting stuff. Of course, you know, we've mentioned him, but Derek Medins and his team, remarkable models, remarkable model work, remarkable explosions. And the puppeteers, again, it's all brilliant stuff, although we don't get to see them walking very much, but the rest of it's great. And, you know, again, how lovely is it to see a close-up sequence of somebody's hand where we get an actual human hand pressing a button or going through the library files of all the brainwaves on tape?
We have that, but in this one, some of the shots of hands and even approaching close-ups of hands are the puppet hands as well. So they make it a little less jarring than it can be in some of the other shows. So I thought their judgment with when they used human hands versus puppet hands was pretty good.
Okay, interesting. We have to mention the actors. The adult voices, I think, are all great. It's nice to hear Shane Rimmer, but that's our British Invader's attuned ears, picking him out instantly in several episodes. Of course, we've got a child actor for the first time, I think, in a Gerry Anderson show. And I think you perhaps had a few problems with him, Brian.
I did, yeah. I found that because you had this very young actor, he wasn't able to do that much with it. So I found the main character at times was a little dull. And the other performances and the other characters were okay. They were, you know, they were pretty good. But even though this was going for a more character-oriented feel, I didn't find the characters as engaging as I did on Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons.
Right. Okay. I mean, yes, it does. I think its child-orientated style sometimes makes it a bit repetitive and dull in terms of the stories and the character development. So, yes, there is that. And, of course, as you say, perhaps the actor playing Joe is sometimes a little bit... there's not much variation, let's put it that way. It's a fairly sort of flat, consistent voice.
Yeah, the delivery is a fairly simple one, which is fair enough. You know, it's a young child doing the role.
And of course, as I've said, you know, the sort of ethics of the show look a bit strange watching it as an adult.
They do.
Yes. And I know you had a few issues with this yourself, Brian.
Well... yeah, of course you have the obvious, as you had mentioned, Damon, the sort of child endangerment things where Joe is subjected to just about anything they need in any situation for a given mission. But in addition to that, they are collecting these brain waves, you know, basically copies of people's minds, although we only... really hear about the knowledge and skills being used, but they're imaging people's minds in these ways that are detailed enough to extract knowledge. and often without the people knowing that they are being recorded. So there are these very strange kinds of privacy issues where we see something that is basically like a hidden bug in a room recording someone's brainwave patterns.
Yes, how weird is that? There are several episodes where they need to steal somebody's brainwaves without them knowing, so that Joe can defuse a bomb or reveal details of a secret plot. But yes, no mention, of course, of the fact that they're stealing people's brainwaves, or really that they're sort of every episode, every week, they're brainwashing a nine-year-old child and then sending him into some sort of dangerous situation with a gun, for goodness sake.
Yes, in many cases, they don't really address why it needs to be Joe. Yes, he's the main character, so dramatically they want to have that happen. But there are many cases where it would make a lot more sense to have an adult man or woman with the skills or expertise implanted than and a pair of glasses going in and doing things rather than a child. There are some cases where it makes sense for his small size fitting into things, or because no one will suspect a child as being able to do these various sorts of things. But even those, I think, tend to be a stretch. And, you know, they should be, you know, sending in others with him with their own sets of glasses, or people other than his own father should be involved, or it shouldn't be Joe at all. You know, there are a lot of things where that seems to come up.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's the child hero of the show, so that's why it's Joe 90. But yes, watching it as an adult gives a strange sort of disconnect. Interestingly, it was when it was shown on the BBC in 1994, I didn't watch it. My son would have been about 7 or 8 then, and perhaps it would have been the perfect age for him to watch it with me. I'd be delighted to hear from anybody who's watched this show with their child more recently, and whether, you know, the child found it interesting and exciting, or whether it now looks a bit dated to kids when we've got a CGI animated Thunderbirds Are Go show on the television instead.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of the issues I had with this were related to it being aimed at young children. And the things that are issues for me well might not be issues for younger viewers. Another instance of that is the briefcase. Joe has this briefcase that one side of it opens and it's like a kid's case with, you know, pencils and paper and things. And the other side has a hidden compartment for his glasses and I think the gun and a number of, you know, his secret agent kinds of things.
A radio and a badge, I think, or something like that.
Yes, a badge that declares he is an agent for the World Intelligence Network that he carries on his missions, which seems a little bit odd to me somehow.
Yeah, not very secret agent, is it? Telling people exactly what he is. But there you go. He's very keen to get that badge as a boy, isn't he? You know, the boy says, when do I get my badge?
Yes, absolutely. And the whole thing about the case is very much the kind of thing that is driven towards merchandising and becoming a toy, and also towards having things with, you know, sort of some neat gadgetry and a neat object to be around and to be carrying. But looking at it now, it seems a little bit strange to have this object in there all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Very strange, but there you go. I sort of noted when I was making my notes about this show, we've talked to some of the features. You know, the stories I don't think ever reach the heights of Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons episodes. And in terms of the vehicles and the effects and the explosions, it's not quite up there with Thunderbirds. Those, I think, are the two twin peaks of Supermarionation. But it's an interesting show. As I say, I'd be delighted to hear from anybody who's watched it more recently, perhaps with their children.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I think in some ways it stands up better than Thunderbirds does because of the look of it, with the better movement of the puppets, I think, and the more natural proportions. There were some sort of racism issues that I had with Thunderbirds that are not here in the same way. They really aren't here in that way at all. While this certainly has its issues, there are things that I liked in it that were quite fun. I think Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, especially, was a much more adult show, even though it was still a children's show. It was much darker and much more adult in its themes than this one.
Yes, a very interesting show as well, Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons. I know it's one of your favourites of the Andersons, I think, Brian.
Certainly of the Super Marionation ones, yes. I think Joe 90, of the Super Marionation shows that I've seen, and I haven't seen them all, but it feels like the youngest one in terms of how it is directed and how it's written. It feels like a younger show than the others.
Yes. Okay. Any other pluses or minuses you wanted to make note of while we were here?
I don't think so. If you don't have anything else, I think we should move on to the recommendations.
Splendid. Who's first this time?
Why don't you go first, Damon?
Okay. So, I think we've covered 5 Gerry Anderson Super Marionation shows so far on British Invaders. And I think the order, in ascending order, goes Secret Service, Firebird X-05, Joe 90, Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons. So, it's not the best of Gerry Anderson Super Marionation shows. I enjoyed watching the episodes. I think the only problem I had is that 30 episodes is perhaps too much now for us. So I'm rather taken by that sampler box set on Amazon. So my recommendation is going to be 6 episodes of Joe 90, 6 Stingrays, which you know we're going to get to at some point on British Invaders, and 6 Captain Scarlets, all for a tenner on Amazon. That's where I would go and plonk your money if you've got a spare tenner. Perhaps save the full box set if you're really a Joe 90 aficionado, but maybe look at the sampler set instead. And of course, do go and check out the groovy title sequence, which is just wonderful. And I may well be posting a link to that on the Facebook group before very long. Okay, Brian, over in Region 1, what was your feeling about Joe 90 as a show?
Well, I am not going to rank all of the Super Marionation shows in order as you have. But I found this one was okay. Sampling a few episodes along with some of the other shows is not a bad idea. I would say that if you have kids you want to show this to in that sort of 8 or 9 years old age range, maybe worth trying. But on the whole, I wouldn't really go with this one. So my recommendation is probably try Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons instead. The look is cool, but this is not the best of their shows.
Okay, interesting stuff about this interesting slice of 60s boyhood spy-fi. And of course, if you disagree with our takes, if you think that Joe 90 is the best of the Super Marionation shows or the worst, do drop by the Facebook group and let us know why.
Absolutely. So, in summary, Joe 90 introduced us to a scientist and his son. The scientist having developed this technology that can read and capture brain waves from any person and transfer them into someone wearing a special pair of glasses. Almost always the 9-year-old boy, his son, Joe. And we see Joe as an agent for the World Intelligence Network, doing all sorts of adventures ranging from flying and driving all sorts of vehicles and going on rescue missions and spy missions and all sorts of things.
lovely bit of 60s stuff from the Gerry Anderson team, perhaps to be sampled only in places, but still very interesting show for us to talk about.
For sure.
And of course, next time, it will be our October releases. And as always, in October, our thoughts turn to Halloween and getting something slightly spooky for you. So this time, we're joining one of Britain's favourite actors, David Jason, and we're diving into the depths of terror in a show called Ghost Boat.
Yes, that should be an interesting one to look at for sure. So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our group there and you can join in on some of our discussions, which are always fun.
Or you may find some rewards and prizes if you join the game experience by listening to British Invaders on the Voice of Geeks Internet Radio Network, VogNetwork.com. The British Invasion takes place there on a Monday and a Tuesday. Do drop by VogNetwork.com. You know it makes sense.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much as ever. And until next time, it's Eamon 90 in England, signing off.